Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, how Africa's future depends on much more than falling commodity prices.
In sub-Saharan Africa, if the right investments are made and the right kind of policy actions are taken to facilitate diversification into manufacturing and services, then we can see this surge in growth continue.
Stephen Radlett is director of the Global Human Development Program at Georgetown University's Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service and author of Africa's Rise Interrupted, published in the June 2016 issue of Finance and Development magazine.
So you begin your article by asking a question that many people and in fact a lot of businesses and institutions are asking these days, and that's has Africa's surge of progress come to an end? But really, as you know, there are millions of Africans that would question whether or not that progress actually ever began. How significant has the so-called Africa Rising been in terms of improving the lives of Africans?
It's been very significant, although it hasn't reached everyone. And it is not surprising that millions of Africans would still say they haven't been reached, because they haven't. But that does not change the case that millions of Africans have been reached in a couple of different ways. Income levels have risen by 75% in real terms since the early 1990s. The level of conflict and war has diminished significantly. So there's much less conflict and violence. There's been a spread of democracy, so basic rights are honored far more than they used to be. Millions more children are in school, especially girls. Girls' enrollment rates have gone way up. And more than anything else, health has improved quite dramatically. In every single country in sub-Saharan Africa, the rate of child death has fallen over the last three decades. There are no exceptions. So while not everyone has been reached, millions have, and for those people, lives have been improved in significant ways. What we need to do now is continue that progress and to spread it to those that haven't been reached.
Right. So there's no denying that the game has changed dramatically in only like less than 2 years, much because of the falling commodity prices. How would you define the legacy of the commodity boom?
The commodity boom helped drive the surge of progress, but it was not the fundamental factor. In fact, Africa's rise began 7 or 8 years before commodity prices rose. It actually, countries began to turn around in the early and mid-1990s. The commodity boom really didn't start until 2002. So right there, that tells you that there's something more that has undergirded this progress. And the more fundamental factors are the improvement in governance, the movement away from dictatorship towards democracy, alongside the improvement and the strengthening of human capacity, where the technical leadership, economic policies, social policies are just much better than they were in the 1980s. Countries are more integrated into global trade and have more access to information and ideas, and most importantly, technology than they did 20 years ago. Those are the fundamental drivers. On top of that, when commodity prices started to go up, those certainly helped in some countries. In other countries, they mattered much less. But fundamentally, it was the other factors that were more powerful. And I think that's what bodes well for the future. The commodity price fall is certainly not helpful for many countries, but those fundamental factors are going to persist into the future.
And you write about one of the benefits from this strong growth in recent years has been, you know, that there are a lot of more skilled leaders and better trained ministries and better governance, perhaps less corruption. How much of this might you attribute to foreign aid, and how much of it might just be sort of a natural progression in a strong business environment?
So foreign aid was an important secondary factor. It's not the prime driver of this progress, but it's been an important contributor. The prime drivers, again, have been this change in capacity, the strengthening of education, the far more skilled leadership, and the change in the global environment that has moved us and the former Soviet Union away from holding up dictators and allowing people to choose their own leaders and hold them accountable. The access to technologies, whether they be agricultural technologies or health technologies, those are very key. Foreign aid has helped support this process in a couple of important ways. Again, in health, access to vaccines, access to antiretrovirals for HIV/AIDS, access to bed nets to fight malaria, all of those have been supplied in large part by aid agencies. And the dramatic improvements that we've seen in health are not solely due to aid, but there's no question in anyone's mind, really, that that funding from aid agencies has helped stimulate that improvement in health and get that access as widespread as it has been. But it's been aid coupled with local heroes, doctors and nurses, mothers that bring their kids to get them vaccinated, and all the workers that that have done so much at the local level to make that health a success. So that's what I mean when I say that aid is a secondary and supporting factor, not the primary driver. Beyond health, aid has also helped in terms of agriculture, help supply new technologies, help provide funding for agricultural extension services. Aid funds have helped build more infrastructure, roads and power. There are still huge shortages, no doubt about it, but aid funding has really helped build that infrastructure, especially in places coming out of war, Uganda, Mozambique, Liberia, and West Africa, and they were able to get back up on their feet because aid agencies help provide that infrastructure. So there are other examples that's helped in education and other things, but we need to move away from the debate that aid is either completely a waste or the savior and the main driver. And it's neither of those. It's a supporting, important secondary factor in this surge of progress.
And you also write about a growing human capital skills base. Do you believe that there is, in fact, the potential for what people are calling the demographic dividend? And what do you think it would take to make that happen?
I very strongly believe that there is the potential for this demographic dividend to pay off. That's not quite the same as strongly believing that it will happen. The potential is there. The opportunity is there. But the growing youth bulge, which is a big part of the demographic dividend, can either be helpful or not, depending on whether or not the right kinds of policies and institutions and approaches are put into place to take advantage of that demographic change. Where it has been successful, broadly in Southeast Asia, that went through a similar demographic change 3 decades ago, a combination of investments in school systems to give people basic skills, and then a movement towards building the infrastructure necessary to support manufacturing, and a change in policies that led to manufacturing and services growth, led to opportunities for millions of jobs to be created. So as this youth bulge grew into young adulthood and were ready to take on jobs, the jobs were there by and large. And that was a key driver in propelling East Asia forward and to some extent Latin America forward as well. In sub-Saharan Africa, if the right investments are made in education systems and infrastructure and the right kind of policy actions are taken to facilitate diversification into manufacturing and services, then the demographic dividend can pay off and we can see this surge in growth continue. But if those policies are not undertaken and those investments are not made, many countries face the possibility that you'll have many unemployed youth and young adults. And that's a recipe for political instability and a lack of economic growth and real disenchantment.
So in the end, do you think that people are being too pessimistic on the future of Africa right now?
I do, but it depends on your time frame and it depends on which countries. So I am pessimistic in the next 3 or 4 years for the countries that are heavily dependent on oil or single commodity exports. For that subset of countries, they're in trouble for the next couple of years, and their economic growth is going to slow down. Their government revenues are going to be much smaller, which means they're not going to be able to fund activities in health and education. But for other countries in sub-Saharan Africa, I'm not nearly as pessimistic at all. The drop in oil prices is actually a big benefit to the majority of countries in Africa because gasoline and bus fares and everything else are much cheaper, and it's actually putting money into people's pockets. And some countries, for example, Cote d'Ivoire, are seeing oil prices fall, which helps them on the import side, and cocoa prices rise, which is on their export side. So they're actually benefiting in some ways. And so the latest projections are that for countries that are not dependent on a single export, growth still looks like it's going to be over 5%, and that's pretty good. So that's the story in the near term. But over the longer term, I'm still pretty optimistic, even for the countries that are fairly dependent on primary exports, especially those that are democracies, that can continue to build on good governance, that can continue to invest in education, continue to invest in health. And I think those countries, because they've got a strong institutional environment, I have much more faith in their ability to continue to progress over the next couple of decades than other countries. So I think you have to unpack it a little bit and not speak about sub-Saharan Africa as a whole going one way or the other, but really think both about the governance systems and the structure of the economic earnings to get a better grip on which countries have better prospects than others.
Stephen Radlett holds the Donald F. McHenry Chair in Global Human Development, is director of the Global Human Development Program at Georgetown University, and was speaking about his article entitled Africa's Rise Interrupted, published in the June 2016 issue of Finance and Development magazine. The magazine is available online at imf.org/FND, or you can download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. You can also hear more IMF podcasts like this one on iTunes or SoundCloud or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts.